Hey, good morning. Have a seat. Welcome to Christ Community Church. My name is Neil, not the regular preacher. I think I'm at the end of the string of series of five guys, which is the fifth guy, which, like, if we're talking baseball here, like last batter. So, you know, lower your expectations. David's back next week, I believe, starting a series in Ecclesiastes, yes? So thankful for that, and thankful to share with you guys this morning, think about the word together, hopefully be encouraged together. The topic is peace from Philippians chapter 4. That's where I want to hang out this morning. So let me pray one more time before we start. Reminded of this old Puritan prayer that has a line that says something like, I'm often like a bird before a man in your presence, Lord, sort of fluttering about, anxious, roaming, wondering, very difficult to be still. At times very difficult, Lord, to just to see you for who you are and sit within who you are. So just ask for grace this morning for us to abide in you, the presence of your Spirit, who has been guaranteed to be with us because he's in us as believers. Let's ask for grace for calm minds and cool spirits, like the Proverbs exhorts, specifically in relation to your overwhelming peaceful presence, your glory, your majesty. We love you, God, and I just ask that you'd speak to us this morning. In Jesus' name, amen. So one of the places I go to kind of find peace in a more practical way is Colorado. Kind of have a habit at Christmas time and in the summer. My wife and I just got back. We were there for a couple weeks, and I was on the back porch of this cabin. First thing I do when I get to the cabin is put out bird feeders. Those of you that know me outside of here know that I kind of have this bird thing. And I'm hoping I'm talking to some bird people in here. And if not, just replace whatever the birds is for me, it's something else for you. Okay, so I'm not that weird. You have your thing too. I have my thing. So I like watching birds. Amongst a lot of other things. Anyway, I get to this cabin, I put out, specifically, it's hummingbird season, so I put out the hummingbird feeders. There's two of them. And this summer, more than ever, I mean, they're always there, but for whatever reason, this summer, the rufous hummingbird, it's like a rusty colored, beautiful little thing, kind of bulkier hummingbird, has like this crazy orange when it reflects one way, that whatever you call the thing on the neck of a hummingbird, it has this like almost like electric orange color. It's great. It's awesome. You know? And I have like my long range, I'm looking at it at a close up and just enjoying, sipping coffee, reading poetry, watching birds. That's my, one of my, you know, peace places. So, but anyway, you know, this bird, there's two types of hummingbirds there. There's the broadtail hummingbird and there's the rufous hummingbird. And the rufous hummingbird, if you look it up in an encyclopedia, the first thing it's going to tell you about it is its infamous sort of ability to claim territory and defend that territory. Like, it's just a total bully. Like, it's a beautiful bird, but it's a total bully. So what ends up happening is I'm there kind of like trying to access my place of peace and reflect on peaceful things. And all week long, I'm watching this bird just like, I put the feeder out. It didn't exist there the day before. That bird claimed the territory, and then it has this little perch on a twig, and I kid you not, all week long, just starts going to war on every single bird that comes near the feeder, not even other hummingbirds. Like, it went after a chipmunk at one point. I mean, just a psycho bird. Anxious bird. It was kind of disruptive. I was thinking about doing something about it because it was kind of messing with with my peace. But you look it up in the encyclopedia, you know, it says that about it, and it kind of just says, like, this is just how they are. This is how they are. So by way of playful metaphor this morning, I mean, what, like, you know, if the 21st century American, if we kind of had a bird encyclopedia write-up, maybe it would sound something like this. Found in most parts of North America, in high concentration near stores selling items high in sugar, caffeine, and alcohol. Don't stay in one place for long. Tend to be territorial. Show strong signs of discontent and anxious behaviors. Don't seem to know what they want out of life. That's just how they are. I mean, is that us? So, if you'll humor me, I want to do a little diagnostic this morning with you. I want to invite you to participate. You don't have to, but I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions that are not hypothetical. They're real questions. Like, as if we were having coffee, I would love to hear you actually say the answer, and I would give mine. But maybe if you could say the answer in your own head this morning to some of these, or at least to start to get the wheels churning for the sake of what we're about to talk about, and maybe just to kind of get your bearings. Ready? How often do you access peace? What does peace even look like to you? Do you have a vision of a peace-filled life? Are you experiencing sustained periods of being present in the moment with awareness and gratitude? Do you have your senses about you? Are you experiencing sustained periods of being present in the moment with awareness and gratitude? Do you have any sense of what is normal in relation to the volume of anxiety you experience on a weekly basis? You have a sense of what's normal and where you sit within that? Do you know that your anxiety means you likely have unchecked fear, which then elicits a very important question in the middle of here, one that I would love for you to dwell on further after this. And it's this brief little question, which is, what are you afraid of? And when I ask that, I'm not thinking so much in the, like, I'm afraid of bears. Although, that's fine if you have a daily, you know, fear of bear attack. I know there's various phobias and whatnot. I mean a little bit more in a nuanced way. Like, if you're anxious, you're afraid. What are you afraid of? Like, answers like not being enough. Maybe it would come up, something like that. Are you living in yesterday or tomorrow? What's your tendency? Probably both, some, but for my wife and I, we know our zones. That my temptation, my anxious place is tomorrow, hers is yesterday. You know, kind of along with that question is, and well, first, do you know that these aren't real places? And the scriptures speak to that. I mean, one of the reasons that God, that the Lord commands us not to worry about tomorrow is because it doesn't exist. Why would you live there? Today exists. Tomorrow doesn't. Yesterday doesn't exist either. Are you, related to that question, are you afraid of who you have been or who you're going to be? Are you anxious about how you haven't measured up or about how you won't measure up tomorrow? Finally, do you know, or really, you know, in a room like this, do you remember that the scriptures promise that Christ will defend your soul with his peace, barring the pathways of anxiety? And that's what Philippians 4 is saying. It's a promise. I didn't pick this topic because it's my favorite sermon. I've never preached this sermon before. I don't know if I have a favorite sermon. I don't know if y'all know that. That's what David asked the preachers to do. Come preach your favorite sermon. And I picked this topic in this text because I love this text and I love this topic because especially in this season of life, maybe always to a certain extent, but especially these days, it's just what my heart aches for. It's peace. Not any type of peace. We're going to get more specific in a minute. But that's just like, my soul is just longing for peace. So I want to talk about it. I want to go to the scriptures about it. I believe wholeheartedly that there is a foretaste accessible now of that future peace that we all know, I hope we all know, is coming. What we need now is the type of peace that surpasses understanding. I don't think that's the type of peace that we're going to need in the new creation. I think we're going to be full and flowing with a lot of understanding. But now we need the type that surpasses understanding because we're constantly in situations that demand that we're able to make sense of things not working out and things not being as they should be and things being fractured and broken, which means we must be able to access a type of peace that surpasses logic and the objective reality of rights and of what's right in front of our eyes at times. I see brokenness. I see fractured existence. I see stress. I experience anxiety. How do I know peace? It's one of my favorite phrases in the scriptures, this reference to the peace that surpasses understanding that will guard our hearts and minds in Christ Jesus. I think it's a beautiful picture and it's a beautiful promise. And I want us to kind of think about it together this morning, if you would. See, because, you know, in relation to one of the diagnostic questions, do you have a vision of peace? I think I kind of do. As I walk the road of Christian maturity, that sometimes feels like quite a slow slog at times. But as I am on that road in my life in God, a vision of peace is just kind of emerging further and further of what could be now in this kind of not yet version of the kingdom that we participate in, and surely. This ache and longing for what will be. Here's a few things about, when I think of the vision, let me just paint a little picture for you. I see a situation in which I'm fully present and grateful in good chunks and percentages of time in my life, whether it be with my children or with my wife or with the people at work or the kids at school or what, you know, that I see a vision of a type of life lived where the majority of the time I'm present and aware and grateful. I think that's a big chunk of what a life of worship is. To live unto God and to live into God requires the ability to constantly name his goodness in real time when it's right in front of your eyeballs. I'm content with who I am, who God has made me to be. I'm not self-conscious about my relationship with God or my relationship with others. Both of these two, you know, like as much as I walk down the road of Christian maturity, at times it can be disheartening the degree to which I'm still kind of maneuvering with God of my standing with him. No matter how robust my theology is of acceptance and adoption and sanctification and imputed righteousness, no matter how robust my theology is, I'm still doing this worry of like, where am I at with you? I want peace there. I want to live into that level of acceptance that I know that he has for me. And I want to live, I want to see that modeled in my relationships with others where there is, you know, complete peace with others, where it's not loaded relationships. You know, they're peace-filled, future new creation type of relationships where I'm completely at peace with you and who you are and you're completely at peace with me and neither of us are playing a game. I'm completely free to love and serve with no strings attached or fear of wounds. My day's work is enough. I have nothing else to prove. All I desire is my daily bread on multiple levels, both in a material way and in the sense of my satisfaction in Jesus. And then further, I am completely satisfied with Jesus and what he has for me every day because I've found ultimate fulfillment in him. And then, of course, this vision expands into a community of people acting that way, which I think is the Old Testament vision of shalom, where the Old Testament vision of shalom and that concept is a Hebrew concept that God has designed the fabric of human existence like a tapestry that's perfectly woven together to form this beautiful whole, and it's knitted and knotted in a way that's just divine, completely in sync, completely in harmony and at peace with one another. I mean, what a grand vision. So we have this promise in Philippians. It's one that I have deeply known to be true. I just forget a lot. We have the promise of peace in Philippians 4, so let's look at it. I think 20 sermons can be preached on this text. I'm just going to preach one. And the one goes like this. Paul says that he exhorts us to exist in a certain type of way to set ourselves up to have that sort of like anxiety barring peace, the presence of Christ guarding our hearts and minds with a peace that surpasses understanding. At the end of the text, he says that you know, you do X, Y, and Z, the God of peace will be with you. So I want to look at those three things, and I would characterize them this way. Be thankful, be thoughtful, be faithful. Be thankful, be thoughtful, be faithful. All those need some nuance and explanation, which is what preaching is. So let's think about these three. Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be known to God. The literal translation for anxiety in the New Testament is a word that means being torn to pieces, fragmented and fractured. You know, God designed our inward parts to be working together in the fruit of the Spirit towards human flourishing, but so often, the place that we find ourselves is in a fragmented, separated state of existence where the things that are meant to kind of be churning together towards the fruit of the Spirit, right? It's not the fruits of, I mean, Tim Keller makes this, I think, very wise, you know, exegetical point. It's not the fruits of the Spirit, it's the fruit. It's all those things work. What the fruit of the Spirit is all these, the goodness of God working together in unity in the Spirit, which is also, side note, why you can have kind of fake and false fruits of the Spirit. So if you come across a dude that seems really peaceful, right, you're like, that dude has the fruit of peace. Maybe not, because peace must be, if it's of the Spirit, must be yoked with joy. So what you might be encountering is a cynic, not a peace-filled person, who is indifferent and depressed, right? So, I mean, it's a little tricky here, right? Just because you're calm doesn't mean you're peaceful. I mean, somebody said to me after the first service, you know, because I, you know, in the midst of this, I'm preaching about this obviously because of it's a struggle. And, you know, somebody, you know, said to me after the sermon, like, I wouldn't have pegged you that way. And I was like, this is exactly how it works. You can't see into my mind and heart. I know how to come across cool and collected. I've learned that. I've had to. But it's an important point to know about each other. We are coming into the presence, even as we gather in the assembly. I know it's kind of a cliche thing about the faces that we put on, but there's just levels to it, right? Like you have no idea what you're encountering in the soul that's standing, like sipping a coffee, telling you about their vacation last week. I mean, there's a deep and real stuff just going on everywhere. What was I saying? Oh, yeah. That fragmented and anxious self, my wife and I kind of adopted these two terms of spiraling and dysregulated. That's, you know, one of the ways that we refer to it, because sometimes it feels like a spiral, right? I mean, like it's something that kind of starts out like this, but it just doesn't take long for it to start working like this. It feels like mother anxiety in me has just had a bunch of children within my own soul, you know, just multiplying itself out. And that's a situation in which oftentimes, whether I'm experiencing it myself or I'm kind of sitting in the pastor, mentor counseling chair with someone else, oftentimes I talk to people who are anxious about their anxiety and depressed about their depression. You know what I mean? It has this feeling of like, I should be further than this. I am worked up the fact that I'm worked up. You know, I'm anxious over the fact that I can't seem to get a hold of my anxiety, and that's the spiral. That's the level of dysregulation. Road trips tend to be dangerous in this regard. I'll look over to my wife at times on a road trip, and when there's like a lull in conversation, just see her kind of staring blankly out the window. I'm like, you okay? Yeah. You spiraling? Yeah. Want to talk about it? No. She's oftentimes somewhere in the past, and she could do the same thing and look over me. You know, you spiraling? Yeah. You want to talk about it? Because I'm highly verbal processor, my answer is always yes. You know, and she doesn't even know what she's asking for. You know, 5 minutes in, she's like, you know, why don't you work that out with the Lord and let me just kind of put on my podcast. Okay, here's the thing. What Paul is exhorting, what does this have to do with gratitude? The movement that Paul's requesting in Philippians 4 is that we bring our spiraling, dysregulated, fragmented self in the midst of our supplications and prayers to the Father for answers about peace, that we bring that person constantly into his presence. And Paul does this kind of strange thing that's a little bit hard to make sense of, where I want to spend the rest of my time on this point, is what he does is, I think what he wants us to have is a growing wisdom in the way that we communicate to God our needs and desires and wants, because he wants us to be growing in what it looks like to understand his work in our lives. So here's the quick little thing to notice in this verse. Paul asks us to bring our supplication and prayers with thanksgiving. And if you're paying attention, what he's asking us to do is to give thanks before we have received anything. That's a very important part of the equation. That the disposition of our expectation, the disposition of our gratitude is set in before anything has been delivered. Why? Because there's going to be a whole range of how God chooses to deliver. All the way from like right here, right now, like here, have it, to a whole range of ways that he's going to deliver that you will not make sense of for a long time. Maybe a month after the fact, maybe a week after the fact, maybe 5 years after the fact. His timing and his manner is going to be odd and confusing and lacks understanding, which is why you need the peace that surpasses understanding, right? Or all the way down the scale, here's the tough one for us, 21st century American Christians. He will not answer now, this side of heaven. We have to reconcile with that. And the ability to say he's not answering, maybe won't answer, and I'm thankful and he's good is at the core of what it means to be a Christian. It's the core of what it means to have deep-seated faith, because you have found the level of satisfaction in Jesus that does not need for him to deliver you from your woes to be at peace with him, because you have this vision of what you know will be the future life with him. And not just the future life, there's a level of satisfaction that you're finding in him now that exists outside of any pains and woes that you say, I will take that anyway. I'll take these pains if I have that level of intimacy with you, because it's the sweetest thing I've ever known. Let's go into this a little bit further. I don't think that this is nervous gratitude, as in you're like in the presence of someone really important and you're kind of like saying, thank you. Hey, Lord, please listen to my request. Oh, thank you for listening to me. I don't want to waste your time. Blah, blah. That's kind of how we act with some important people in this life. Like we're infringing on this time. We're grateful that they're considered this request because you're really important, really busy. Not the point. It's this gratitude that, you know, Romans 8:28 has become, you know, very overused and very cliche, and it's sort of the pillow embroidery promise. But the fact that God chooses to work all things for the good of those who love him, it's the preemptive gratitude, knowing that this is the way that he operates, despite our ability to understand how that's going to play out. Your gratitude is a preemptive disposition that has everything to do with your peace. It is the acceptance that every ask has a process. It's the preemptive acceptance that you will likely not understand the timing or the manner in which God will answer. You will not be able to comprehend his non-answer as good either. Your expectation provides a context for your peace and anxiety. Consider this with me for a minute. It's kind of a silly, dumb example, but I think maybe it'll help. And it'll provide some levity because I just got super serious. When I go to a new city, I'm always looking for the best places to eat because I'm a foodie. Not necessarily proud of that. Don't know if, you know, I think there's some things that are good about it and some things that are bad. But that's how I operate. And so I use apps like Yelp. You got any Yelp users out here? Okay. And anyway, what I'm looking for is just like the perfect experience all the time. You know, I want the best food that's on the block. You know, I want to see what's all the, you know, I want to find just the right thing. And, you know, I'm not going to go to a place that has 1-star reviews. Well, why would I do that? We have the ability now this day and age to avoid that place, right? So why would I go to a place with 1-star reviews? You know, my wife, bless her heart, like, is not wired this way, and it's very good that she's not, you know, and she's like, if I'm driving and she's looking up Yelp places, you know, she's like, you know, how about this place? It looks good. You know, how many stars? 4 stars. How many reviews? 9. What is wrong with you, woman? Like, that means their 9 friends said that this is a good place, you know, give me the phone, you know. No, but the point is expectation. If I go to the 5-star review place with over 500 reviews, which is what I'm aiming for, I have an expectation of what's going to deliver from that place. If I go to the 1-star review place, I have a different sort of expectation of what's going to happen in that place. I know it's a little bit of a stretch, but in relation to my anxiety and my peace, it's not as if all of life is a 1-star review restaurant, but it is closer to it in the sense of the need to adjust your expectations towards what's about to happen. That has everything to do with your ability to be grateful and present. When I counsel other younger, I'm a head of a school, and when I now have just kind of reached the point where I've been doing it long enough to invest in some other heads of schools, and one of the coaching strategies I employ with them is you need to name right now, in July, you need to look, write it on your whiteboard, do whatever you have to do, write, I will want to quit 3 times this year. Name that, face it, and embrace it now. It's part of the job. And be thankful for that. This is, we'll keep digging into this, but the weird thing Paul's asking us to do is to be thankful for that thing. All that surrounds that I want to quit has everything to do with who God is making you to be and what the center of activity of God in your life. In July, say, God, thank you for my November I want to quit streak in advance. And walk into it with the head up. Expect all the primary emotions and recognize them as gifts that compel you into the way of peace. In case you're not paying attention, most of the human emotions are at face value seemingly negative emotions. And wise people have suggested, and I agree, that these emotions are to be fully participated in and recognized as gifts, not as impairments. Here's what I mean. When you experience hurt, as you will and have, you have an opportunity to see it as a gift in the pathway to healing and courage. When you experience loneliness, you have an opportunity to see it as a gift, paving the way to intimacy. I've got a pastor friend. He's going through some hard times, experiencing high levels of rejection after high volumes of years of investment, one of those pain places. His world's kind of falling apart, and I gave him a call to check in, and he's, you know, very emotional and existential person like myself, and, you know, expecting to hear of the distraught ways, and just, I know him well enough at this point, just by the tone and timbre of his voice immediately on the phone call, I knew where he was. He was in that intimacy seat. Now, how you doing, man? Well, my life is falling apart, but I've never known Jesus like this before. Loneliness as a gift and a pathway to intimacy. That we should experience sadness as an opportunity to practice acceptance. That we should experience anger as an opportunity to grow in passion for things like justice and righteousness. That we should experience fear as an opportunity for faith and wisdom. That we should experience guilt as an opportunity for freedom and to know forgiveness. Rather than, let's do a little bit more diagnostic. If you let those primary emotions rule and bend and fracture your potential for peace and flourishing, and they become an impairment, which is the schemes of the devil in your life, rather than the full range of human emotion that kind of help build us into these ultimate God-glorifying agents in the earth, if you kind of fall victim to that, which you do, we do constantly, which is part of the reason for the sermon, if you let your hurt create the seed, create the soil and seedbed for resentment, you will be racked with anxiety and your peace will be destroyed. I mean, that's even a good little metric this morning as we continue with the diagnostics. Like, what relationship in your life is loaded with resentment? Just name it this morning. That is fracturing your inside. Instead of seeing that place of hurt as something that's looking to kind of destroy you and disrupt you, you have to name it as a gift and begin to at least have the thought that this is meant to practice healing and courage. Instead of your loneliness being intimacy, if you let your loneliness become apathy and cynicism, you're in for a world of hurt. If you let your sadness turn into self-pity, if you let your anger turn into depression, if you let your fear turn into anxiety, and of course, if you let your guilt turn into shame. You will be racked with anxiety and your existence will be fractured on the inside. It's helpful to call to mind at this point, I think, the preeminent example of unmet real-time expectations. Remember, what we're talking about here is trying to posture yourself towards a type of relationship and supplication and communication with God that's front-loaded with gratitude for the nature of the process of how God makes his people. When the disciples looked upon Jesus at the cross, I mean, let's just track one of them. As Peter looked upon his hopes and dreams and a man and the Messiah hanging dead, this is the center of the Christian narrative. We need not forget. I mean, not to, you know, I mean, the center of what we know to be true in relation to how God's operate is Peter looking upon a dead Savior, probably having something like the thought, like, I know Paul hasn't existed yet, but how is this working all things for the good? How? I mean, it's over. Dreams dashed. How in what world is this what's right and good? God, what are you going to do with this one? I mean, the irony there. And the irony is everything. I mean, I don't know this to be true, but I imagine God sitting on his throne, sitting on his hands, you know, biting his lip because of his love and passion for Peter, just like wanting to fast forward the tape for him. I mean, probably not in the way that God operates, but you got to imagine that God's just like, it's the exact opposite of everything you feel and think. This is the only way. This is everything. But yet still in our lives, right, we live our life in such a way where on a way smaller scale, we're like, how can this be what's good for me right now in these pain points? And we have to remember in this moments that those moments at the center of the Christian narrative is God acting in a way that seems the opposite of what's good. Sacrifice of the Son. It's how he rolls. When you don't understand, you're right smack in the middle of it, of all the good stuff. Do all your prayer and supplication ahead of time with thanksgiving. Be thankful. Let your heart be known and accept the process. And maybe, I think, watch your prayer life evolve and change and become sanctified. I didn't say this last service. I'm gonna try this one out. I mean, let this be more of a thought project than like, this is what the Lord is saying. I just wonder, as we grow in maturity in this type of prayer, if like our list of asks gets shorter and shorter, not because we don't care about God making all the things right around us, because our level of trust that he always will is growing. I mean, what if the nature of my prayer life evolves in such a way where it's like, Lord, I don't know what to ask you anymore. I just want whatever you want to do to me. That's what's always been the best thing. Right? So instead of like the 15 to 50 things I need from you, what if my prayer list is shrinking down into 3? Make me more like you. Make me desperate for you and do whatever you want. Right? Something like that. Number two and three are super short. Don't be afraid. Paul says to act this way in prayer and you get the peace of Christ that surpasses understanding. Then Paul says, and whatever is true, whatever is right, whatever is lovely, think about these things. So Paul's, and then he's going to say, and the God of peace will be with you. So his second ask is that you be thoughtful in a specific way, and I just want to lay a quick paradigm out for you on this point. You may not always be able to understand what God's doing, but you can always access those basic truths. You can always access beauty. You can always access goodness. Now you might be saying, like, hey, Anderson, like, no, that's the point of my anxiety. Like, I can't access the truth, which is true. You end up with some real irrational thoughts, and like your theology gets messed up, and why would God do this? Why would God do that? And that's fine. What I mean is, like, let's just get super simple. Let's streamline it. If you're in a confused place with your thoughts, there's always a way to kind of streamline them down into, like, if I was sitting with you for coffee and you were feeling like you couldn't access the thoughts that Paul wants you to access in order to help drive your emotions and your feelings and your actions, I would just like go all the way back to the basics, like, okay, well, do you believe that God is real? Yeah, Anderson, yeah, I still believe that God's real. That's great. That's a grace. Do you believe that he's something like he represents him to be in the Christian scriptures? Yeah, I can't figure it all out, but yes, I do. Okay. We're in a good spot. You have an anchor point in your thoughts, because I want to give you this little paradigm for free. I hope it's resonant. I hope it feels true for you. This is how we operate. Thoughts, feelings, actions. It's almost how it always goes. What you think to be true about a given situation or, you know, in some higher end, your theology, whatever, drives how you feel. How you feel drives what you do. That's how it tends to go for most people, regardless of personality type. What you think drives how you feel, drives what you do. And so oftentimes, what anxiety is, and lack of peace, and instability, and fragmentation, and spiraling, is getting caught playing ping pong back and forth between, remember the paradigm is thoughts, feelings, actions, is getting bouncing back and forth between feelings and actions. I feel sad. I'm going to eat countless Doritos and watch Netflix, right? So that's your action from the feeling, right? And then how is 10 bags of Doritos and binging, you name the thing, going to make you feel? Not well, right? So you're back to feelings, back to, that's a spiral, right? And you can use it all sort of, so what's needed to break the spiral? True thoughts. True thoughts. Biblical thoughts. The truth of God in human existence. Now, it's not always easy, and the spiral's not always broken, but what Paul is I think begging of us is to constantly be the type of Christians that are through the memorization of scripture and other tactics are reorienting with thoughts that are true in order to kind of correct emotions and help fuel a different sort of action. So even on a more basic level, if you're not doing like high-level theology, there's some basic thoughts you need to re-access as an image bearer of God. Even something like, what I'm doing right now is destructive. Or, this is not who I'm made to be. I don't know how to get back, but this is not okay, is important to say and to think. That thought, you know, some of the basic thoughts of, I'm a child of God who is loved beyond my capacity to understand. Do I believe that? Yes, I do. Let's get reoriented. A while back, I started a list of books, songs, movies, and poems that help kind of catapult me back to the thoughts that I need to have to kind of aid with the right emotions to aid with the right actions. And no, you cannot have the list because it's very private, because I started sharing the list some and then people are like, that doesn't do it for me. I'm like, well, then get your own list. But I'll give you a few. Maybe 5 years or so ago, I grew up in the church. My dad was a pastor. Maybe 5 years or so ago, I had a mentor figure who was kind of working me through some struggles, and his counsel and advice was, hey, I want to give you a gift. I was like, what's this gift? He's like, I want to give you Psalm 23. I was like, I know Psalm 23. He's like, no, you don't. I'm like, yes, I do. He's like, not from everything I'm hearing from you, you don't. I'm like, okay. And so he kind of wrote me a prescription. You go home and you live in this verse for 7 days. Then come back and let's talk. So I did. And I've been living in that psalm for 5 years straight. all these new layers of meaning and needs that I need from that psalm. It's a constant place of the reorientation of the true thoughts that I need to re-access, to re-regulate. I memorize a lot of poetry. I titled the sermon "The Peace of Wild Things" because it's one of my favorite poems. "When despair for the world grows in me and I wake in the night at the least sound, in fear of what my life and my children's lives may be, I go and lay down where the wood drake rests in his beauty on the water, where the great heron feeds. I come into the peace of wild things who do not tax their lives with forethought of grief. I come into the presence of still waters and gaze above me at the day-blind stars waiting with their light. For a moment, I rest in the grace of the world and am free." That's Wendell Berry's kind of take on Psalm 23, I think, and it recenters me all the time. I go to not just songs, but specific, if you're a musician, you know, or music is big for you, I go to certain parts of songs. Citizens and Saints has a song called "How Majestic," and there's a bridge. I've led it here a couple times that I won't go into it for the sake of time here, but like it just wrecks me every time in all the ways I need to be wrecked. Same with John Mark McMillan's song, "Nothing Stands Between Us." There's a bridge that when the arc of that musical bridge comes in and he starts talking about the degree that God will go to have you. You know? I watch Walter Mitty. Seen that movie? It's risky sharing it. You might not like it. It's fine. There's a scene where Sean Penn and Ben Stiller, it's kind of the pinnacle of the movie. It doesn't give anything away, kind of. He's a wildlife photographer. He's like hunting down the snow leopard up in the, you know, India somewhere up in the mountains, and Ben Stiller's sitting right next to him, and Ben Stiller's gone through great lengths to try to kind of find Sean Penn, and there's a lot of layers to what's happening in this moment if you're paying attention to the movie. But anyway, Sean Penn, like the snow leopard, like this very elusive thing people can ever find, like finally comes out, it's time to take the picture, and Sean Penn's looking straight into the camera, these steel blue eyes, you know, and kind of withered gray, you know, withered, weathered face, and Ben Stiller's sitting right next to him, and Sean Penn's like this, looking at the snow leopard, and kind of tells Ben Stiller to kind of look through the lens, and Ben, you know, looks through there, and he kind of goes back here, and then you have these cool moments where Ben Stiller's like super anxious that he's going to miss the shot, but he won't take the shot. And so Stiller's like, "And take the shot." And after all that effort and whatnot, Sean Penn's like, "Sometimes I don't take the shot. It ruins being in this moment." Now, I'm not going to explain all the reasons. That means a lot to me, but it helps. That type of, these type of like deepest truths of what life is all about helps me get recentered or reoriented. And all of a sudden, the next day, my task list has just shifted from stuff that's stupid to stuff that means something. Last thing before close. So you're thankful, you're thoughtful, and I'm going to do what Paul does, really. Paul just kind of throws us in at the end of the line, really, like, hey, you know, basically everything you see me do, everything you heard me say, like, do that stuff. And so there is this point in the church where we're like saying, like, hey, like, if we are going to choose to pursue a self-absorbed life track where all of life is just figuring out our stuff and getting to the place that I want to be. If that's what my life is, rather than the practices of this rich tradition of the faith, the things that lead to peace, gathering with the assembly, praying, reading the scriptures, worshiping, serving other believers, so on and so forth. The practices of the faith are the things that initiate the God of peace presence in our lives. If that other track, that one track thing is what we do, you will not find peace. You will not. I was eating inordinate amounts of barbecue with Richmond the other day. And I was kind of ranting about the fight for faith in middle age, like just some of the challenges. And in between, you know, bites of briskets and ribs, Richmond says, "Well, hey, what are the things that tend to work to sort of reignite that faith for you?" That is a great pastoral question. So my answer in that moment was, you know, I think one of the foolproof ones is serving. For me, the way I'm wired, I'm introvert, kind of, you know, get caught in the thoughts. And one of the things that I need the most and always kind of brings the head above water is I got to go put my hands and feet in a place where people need Jesus in spiritual ways and in material ways. I gotta. We practice the things of the faith. Be faithful in these. Be thankful. Be thoughtful. Be faithful. Let me close with this. The reason you have this ache, and I hope you have the ache for peace, is not because you are wired to desire comfort and leisure. And just things to be calm. That's not it. The reason you crave peace is because you are wired for relationship with the Prince of Peace. Your longing, your craving, and if you're new here this morning, you don't even know what all this is about. I don't mean to sound cocky, but I know you better than you know yourself. If you're not a believer, what you're looking for is Jesus. Every time you're spiraling and dysregulated, what you're craving is deep intimacy with Jesus, the Prince of Peace. Let's pray. Jesus, there's no one like you. There's no one like you. You are the Comforter. You are the Prince of Peace. Lord, give us a vision. Give us a vision of what it looks like to grow into the deeper places with you, to establish ourselves as people who are participating in the promise of the peace that surpasses understanding, and your protection and your guarding of our hearts and minds. Pray for even just images of what that looks like in daily life as you go to war over the things that are coming for us. Thank you for that, God. And teach us this sort of prayer life, Lord, where we're ready to kind of give you thanks and praise for any version of it, of this life that you're about to walk us down. Whatever that pathway that's in front of us that you know, just like you knew for your son, whatever that pathway for us that you know is going to hurt, teach us how to just kind of peer down that path and say, God, thank you. Thank you for that. Thank you for all of it. I just want to be like you. I just want to be with you. I just want to know you. We love you, Jesus. Meet us at the table today. Amen.